Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. It's a wonderful, cold, really cold. Winter didn't even knock, just budged in. But I hope you all are prepared to just get something warm to make sure that you don't freeze. So winter clothes are all over, pretty much in every retail shop that you get in right now, and the price may be a little bit higher because, it's a season where the season creates the demand for the product, so therefore, demand equals price goes up. Now, with that, you could just, get yourself whatever you can put your hands on to make sure you stay warm, get a blanket, get a jacket, get someone's son, someone's daughter, as long as, you take responsibility after the consequences of, over winter protection, kicks in. That's not a joke. Like, seriously. Now that we have that out of the way, let's have a continental discussion. Still in the line of transport, like we had last week. Talking about Africa's infrastructure, energy and the infrastructure initiatives to bring to life the real life, real world experience, more like a real life manifestation. Let's go spiritual now on this one. Manifestation of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. Yes, we have everything on paper and it's impeccable. We have all the right capital letters in all the right places, all the commas and all the vocabulary. All we have, spell checked everything. It sounds very superb. Except the implementation is where things are not looking very realistic. If it was all as rosy in practicality as it is on paper, then the Africa Continental Free Trade Area would be a booming right now. Except there are few pieces that were not put in place to allow the those words that we have on paper in relation to the Africa Continental Free Trade Area to come to life, and we already covered to some degree parts of Africa's need for transport and energy connectivity when we talked about energy and transport. But today we're not only are we going to isolate transport alone, but we are going to dive more into the aviation industry than, rail and road, even though those ones are, bound to come up in comparison here and there. Dwight?
Good afternoon, guys. We need to rephrase the one word you used, Helmut.
Which is?
The AFCFTA, not yet. You said has not, so we have to work with has not yet gotten to its fruition stage of things.
We're trying.
You can't write the AFCFTA off yet. We are still endeavoring, for the past 50 years of AU's existence.
Yeah.
We are still going there. We are still en route, Helmut. We are embarking. We are still mobilizing our lower limbs to a predetermined destination.
That sounds pretty much like me. You will run into me in my 70s. We get in a relationship like, I'm not yet ready.
But I do see ourselves,
in a short-term period,
working with each other.
Save for the back problems and
and the knee problems.
Engine malfunctioning.
Let's not give people ideas. Okay. Winter hasn't even started in full earnest yet.
Feels like winter have started. It feels like winter is in full swing.
Yeah. But we're not yet there.
Yeah, we're not yet there.
Yeah. So, okay, so our discussion obviously is based upon what the I always get the words wrong, the
Aviation Week Africa.
Meaning Africa comes second after aviation.
I just go with our. I decided to shorten it on my way here.
But I could also have said Africa Week Aviation, and then it doesn't. Yeah, you're right. It doesn't gel. So, our's aim basically is trying to sort of like promote the SATM a lot quicker. Remember the two pieces of literature I sent you, which is the single Africa air transport market or mechanism. I'm just not sure about the M. And SATM is something, Helmut, that I recently discovered, what was it, back in 2024. It was also a Namibia Airport's event. Mm-hmm. So SATM's aim is still about connecting all African airspaces with each other.
Yeah.
Now, there was a little bit of a, if I can say, sort of like an anomaly thrown into this mix, is that at this year's Aviation Week Africa, was that there were representatives of the air forces of Namibia and of Zambia present at this year's one. Mm-hmm. But the thing is just, the sort of like the whole ceremonial things, like the speeches, the ceremonial tour, and all those other stuff, took a little bit long because I couldn't stay for the panel discussions. The first panel discussion would have had the two sort of like commanders of both air forces presenting and having a conversation regarding about, you know, how should we look at the airspaces and connecting the airspaces of like Namibia and Zambia, or in a broader sense into SADC. And then take it from there. Because if you go read SADC's particular economic integration strategy, né?
Yeah.
It's basic wording that just says, this is where we wish to be.
Yeah.
It doesn't say or have a roadmap that says, okay, from this step we move to this step, and from this step we wish to achieve this step, and from this step we should see some sort of an integration of the airspaces whereby the air forces are sharing information and data and intelligence about, you know, who's flying through whose airspace without asking prior permission.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I describing it to you like that, Helmut? It's because, remember what happened? Do you remember the noise around IShowSpeed at the start of the year?
Yeah.
Do you remember that IShowSpeed had to reschedule his flight back to Namibia?
Wasn't it because of the whole border issues?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because the plane IShowSpeed was traveling in didn't have clearance in advance enough to enter our airspace. Because I think they were on a chartered flight or on a chartered jet, you know, like those small jets that quickly fly.
Yeah, like Yango, but aviation.
Yeah. Pretty expensive, but yeah.
Very.
Very. I mean, you need a couple of millions.
Yeah.
US dollar.
Yep.
Benjamin Franklin's. Don't show up with Hendrik Witbooi.
Nah.
You'll be asked, what are you doing? Are we playing Monopoly? So anyway, the particular concern, that that pops up from that example like I just gave you was a discussion of how we look at the airspace above us, né? Because the airspace, Helmut, is not just as not as easy as Franz one told me about, you know, his fellow Zambezian family. I'm sorry, Franz, but I'm throwing you under the bus here. How some of the fellow Zambezians would walk across the river to go visit the relatives on the other side, and like you've shared in many cases, you know, it's just a boat ride away.
Yep.
Then you're in Angola or you're back in Namibia.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of flow of people in that scenario. With airspace, it's not as simplified.
No.
And it's not as straightforward. You just fly a kite and you're attached to the kite and you're in. No. So first and foremost, that's one of the things that, that firstly, you know, some sort of a integration strategy around the airspaces of countries. Because what was the one example that happened earlier this year as well? Or was it last year? Remember the story of what happened with Estonia? Was it with Estonia or was it Poland? Where the Russian fighter jet flew into another country's airspace.
Yeah, it was. I don't about. I think it was one of the.
Wasn't Estonia.
Yeah, look. One of the EU members scrambled a jet in response to the Russian, I think, defense minister who was flying from main plane Russia to, is it Kaliningrad?
Mm.
Yeah, and now they
and there was a fighter jet.
Yeah, the jet was scrambled because now the story on that one is a very interesting one because the NATO guys are claiming that yes, they know that the route that the plane was using is a pretty standard for you know for I think I'm not sure if it's all Russian planes or just you know their dignitaries, but the thing is the NATO guys are claiming that they tried to you know to contact the you know the plane because they must be in constant communication to know which plane is where, but there was no response, so they scrambled a jet and they were a little too close, and the you know two jets escorting the. You know, the defense minister came in between and, you know, just leaned over a bit to show off their payload. And the NATO guys were like, okay, fine, we're out of here. But yeah so the thing is, the constant communication. Because, like, at any point, any country would like to know who is in the airspace. Yeah. You don't just, take cars, for example. You can just get in your garage, you know, just hop in your car and drive to wherever you know, you don't have to let, take, for example, anyone in the car industry regulatory authority know. As long as you have all your paperwork, you know, up to date, you can just, you know, take off.
Yeah. And
but for airspace, you can't do that.
And you're driving on a public piece of infrastructure.
Yeah.
But with airspace, there is no infrastructure. The infrastructure is on the ground as well. So to try and also qualify what you see like on the ground or on the sea or on the rivers, the river systems, it's completely different also with the air. Now, it's a good thing you highlighted that, Helmut, because the reason why I asked that was there is like a 20-kilometer limit in your border. If you are approaching your border, you're flying a jet. Let's say you fly an air, a fighter jet from Windhoek to, let's say, the northern border between Namibia and Angola. You're flying. Now, there's a 20-kilometer like zone. Then their radar picks up this airplane. Oh. If it enters that 20, but the 20 kilometers like... This is the border.
Like 20 kilometers within the country?
Within your country.
Okay.
So there's like a zone here. If
so
it's like
20 kilometers before your border.
Before the actual border. Then they can detect the plane. And it's the same on the other side of the border. Now that's, it's usually a scenario.
Interesting.
It's because it's usually a scenario, for example, like in terms of military strategy, so as to not make the other people nervous. Hence the reason also why, you see so much traffic in terms of like basic passenger air travel, like in a European, in a Southeast Asian, in a South American, in a North American context, and even in the North Atlantic between Europe and North America, you see so much air traffic because they've already ironed out the differences. Remember, we also spoke about this end of last year, about the air travel discussion, where the current... How to get to a level of, you know, you achieving cheaper flights between Europe and North America was because of the, what was that? What was that treaty's name? It was a treaty between Europe and the United States way back in the 1930s.
Yo.
That's how old the treaty is, Howard. So Africa has to come to the same particular party. But here's the thing, Helmut. I don't know if it's a discussion of let's first put a budget aside for every African country to have an airport.
Yeah, right.
Or if it's let's put a budget aside for every African country to have an airline. Do you know what you can have an airline from? How much you don't need jet engines. British Airways didn't start with jet engines. They started with basic propeller planes. Lufthansa didn't start with jet engines. They started with propeller planes. So there's a Canadian company. There's a Russian company. There's a Chinese company. There's a... Who's the other company that also makes planes? There's another company, but it's propeller planes for passengers. Is it named Embraer? Or, but you can start small. You can fly 50, 20 people. I mean, yeah, it'll probably take you 100 years to get to your destination. And maybe in between a few ducks, you know, would bring down your plane and your engines. But, I mean, it's not rocket science. We don't have to reach for the rockets first. We can go with basic propeller airplane to also travel and boost travel between countries. I mean, the photos that you will find of the 1950s and 1960s, Helmut, before the actual turbine jet engine came out, was phenomenal. It was a big body plane with a big fuselage with two propellers on its wings, and that's how people traveled.
Now, look, the thing is, that's the cost of, in comparison to other modes of transport like rail and road, and both setting up the infrastructure and maintenance, and also, well, basically, the stuff that you need to maintain the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, what you just described in terms of, airspaces. That's because, countries must know, basically every country with an airspace, they have,
this is what the plane looks like.
Well, they have a defense type of system. Yeah. They have any type of a defense system in place that can help them know what's happening in their airspaces.
Yeah.
Now that you pointed that out, and I'm thinking about how vulnerable our, shorelines are in terms of they're by the Atlantic. I'm thinking like, I hope that it's not that terrible in terms of how we maintain our airspace.
Yeah.
Because, well, we have a bunch of fishermen basically getting in our country illegally and catching our fish because we don't have the means to keep our seas, well, to patrol our seas and make sure that our resources and our borders are safe.
Exactly.
Because we are always, all the infrastructure has a tendency of spending over 2 years in service. I hope it's not the same with our airspace because, that would be bad. Now,
And the big concern is still on the infrastructure now.
Yeah.
It seems like we are like programmed in this idea that you need to own the most expensive hardware. Helmut.
Yeah.
They still make these propeller passenger airplanes.
Now, that's...
Yeah, you will take 5 hours to get to your site. Yeah, sure. But still.
Dwight, this is what I'm. This is how I'm translating what you're just saying.
Yeah.
And let's just have this discussion in terms of road transport.
I'm glad you get it.
Let's just come to road transport.
Yeah.
The point you're making makes a lot of financial sense, considering the amount of money that the country, considering we live on a continent of stingy men's association. If you think of, we're not very good at paying for the things we want. Now, the whole thing of us going back to the Cessna type of planes to use as like the main mode of transport.
Oh, Cessna is one of the manufacturers that the AI suggests. Yeah.
Oh.
So Cessna is still operating. And it's Russian.
They're still operating, but it's just more like light aircraft.
No, they make everything.
Yeah, they're very common with light and
Yeah, here with us, we know the light aircraft.
Budget.
The ones that fall out of the sky sometimes when it decides to fall out of the sky.
I know, right? It fell on someone's car somewhere.
Dude, I drove past that back in 2011 or 2010? 2009.
How do you explain that to the insurance?
They literally missed the neighborhood that I stayed in to fall in Olympia on someone's house. The plane. Then, the same week, we went to drop off my brother when he was still a student at UNAM. You have to drive past that highway, the one leading to UNAM. Not Western Papers, mm-hmm. leading here past Academia and
yeah.
and Pioneer Spa. And just like 30 minutes before we drove there, another Cessna had fallen right there.
Is the pilot? Now, look.
No. I want to ask that's.
Air crash investigation.
What's their name? The guys, the aviation authority.
Yeah.
The other aviation authority.
Yeah. Okay. Now, here's the thing. I think that, you know, looking at how difficult it would be both financially and basically skills-wise to get to the level of operating a state-of-the-art aviation industry across the continent, I would just say, you know what? Let's start with rail. Let's start with rail and work our way up. Because, well, first of all, we have, you know, we already have rails that are operating.
Mm.
That's one. And now the infrastructure, in terms of maintenance, is not as expensive as the aviation industry.
Yeah.
Because the aviation industry, even by standards, for you to get your license, just look at how much, you know, just look at the requirements that you must meet, even after you have, after getting all your A plus, and you have gone through, you know, you have gone through aviation school to get a commercial license. It's a nightmare.
Yeah. But here's the thing, Hamoud. We could have Namibia.
Let me
be honest.
Can't believe we are talking about this considering we don't have one commercial.
Namibia, Namibia can dominate. Now, I like speaking from competitive edge. Unfortunately, I've also played a lot of sport where you always have to pursue competitive advantage.
Yeah.
I've worked in a competitive field as well. And competitive advantage, Helmut, is something that a country can also capitalize on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at the people that began with the engineering discipline as we know it,
yeah.
technically, according to us, the modern-day engineering as we know it, let's say the Germans, for example, who made the first car.
Yeah.
Why has it been so difficult, Helmut, for us to replicate... To make a car. And I'm not saying...
Patents?
It's... No, Helmut. If you've seen how the technology guys, the tech bros from the United States have been acting,
yeah.
they have been continuously and consistently breaching patents. Why should you bother?
Well, they have billions to defend themselves, or more like to ward off all the lawsuits when they come flying.
Helmut, break the rules, defend later. Defend your position later.
You would do just fine in the corporate world.
Yeah, I know. And I did it a lot.
Defend. Look, that's the modus operandi of the corporate.
And you know what was? You know what was one of the things that the one boss told me?
Yeah.
He said, Dwight. No, he used an Afrikaans term, which is a swear word. I'm not gonna do that. Repeat it now. But he said, Dwight, you always cause a lot of crap for us. And I told him, listen, boss. At least you know I'm working. I told him, at least you know what I'm doing, that I'm working, and that I'm busy with work.
That's it.
That's it. At least you know I'm busy working. Nothing else, nothing more. So, the particular aim from that has been, Helmut, as we're having this discussion, and the major talking point for the listener to understand is that the Aviation Week Africa mentioned SATM. And SATM is the exact reason as to why the Aviation Week Africa actually was held in Namibia. Because Namibia actually wants to champion the AFCFTA, like you also outlined it, Helmut.
Yeah.
Now, when you go back to the SATM perspective, SATM's aim is, let's connect the airspaces of every African country to get the tourism markets of every African country to be bolstered, to have trade be bolstered between every African country. But here's the thing, Hamoud. Why are we reaching for the iPhone 27 on the shelf? Why can't you just firstly start with the Nokia 1100 that's in front of you? Hamoud, it should not be a barrier. Technology is not a barrier for entering into a market. Because if I just pulled up to you and showed you all, look at how lovely this plane is, Hamo. Double propeller. Sure, it doesn't carry 100 people, but you know,
for domestic travels.
But and regional. You can do regional flights. So if you can have a fleet of 10 of these airplanes, you'll be connecting Madagascar with Namibia.
What's the maintenance on that fleet, though?
Way less than a turbine engine.
Like a commercial airline.
Way less than a turbine jet engine. Jet engine plane. Yeah, way less, because this is a propeller. This is the engine. The propeller is the engine. Way less. So now, you highlighted the training of the pilots.
Yeah.
Now you can ship more pilots that can fly these things. Because it's like with a car license, you have classifications of the license.
The type of cars that
of the
you
type of vehicle you can drive,
depending on the license you have. Yeah,
exactly. It's exactly the same system, but for some reason, Namibia is gone and it's gone and it's in the past. Yeah? But to move,
we will bring it back. That's on purpose.
I know you did that on purpose, Hamad, because I was also trying to avoid that thought, because it's what the minister said also in his speech at that thing. While complaining about, which I assume is that he paid out of his pocket for the ticket to Ondangwa.
Mm-hmm.
He complained, 7,000 to fly from here to there and back.
Yeah.
And I said, and I thought to myself, it's a return ticket. What did you expect? I think he probably paid it out of his pocket. And he was like, this is absolute horse manure. Why am I paying this much? Well, unfortunately, Minister, that is economics at play today. Now, obviously, he made the threat also there in between that he will investigate the prices. The prices must come down.
Yeah.
But it's not as pure and simple. I mean, if he does not want to subsidize the airline for what the airline, the environmental elements the airline is exposed to, if he is not going to subsidize, a minister must stay out of pricing of a company. A minister has no place in the pricing of a company. Hamad.
Yeah.
Even the discussion of the Standing Committee on microlenders and cash loans.
Mm-hmm.
A Standing Committee has no place in the private sector. Why, Helmut? They need to establish, because if you make the mistake and you motivate what your pricing is, that's the conversation we had a week and a half ago. If you motivate what your pricing is, you have salaries to pay. You have water, electricity to pay.
Yeah.
You have this and this and this and whatever.
And I also have your taxes to pay, by the way.
Which are the taxes and tariffs and other things to pay. What role does a standing committee have in the affairs of a private business? What business do they have? Just like, what role does a minister have in the affairs of a private sector? Stay out of it.
You can get into it, but here's one thing that you're going to be facing, which is a gigantic task.
Look.
Now, you will have to basically, because if you are going to, it's very easy to make a claim that you are overcharging. But then when you show up, and that's one thing I like about courts, when you show up in court, we are now down to the technical language. When you say overcharging, what do you mean? Overcharging in relations to what?
In comparison to what?
Look, if you can just bring all that information, if you come prepared with your information that, I'm saying, this is overcharging according to this piece of legislation, and this and this and this and this are supposed to be the standard price, whether it's by Namibian law, International Aviation Authority, and all those things, and therefore, the court or the Namibian government has the power to change the pricing in this act. If you can come with all your information well prepared, you can. But I can only imagine how much that's going to cost.
No. Look, Helmut. The economics is straightforward. And it's not even economics.
Yeah.
It's accounting. It's business guidance.
I'm fueling.
It's business principles.
Their services.
So you already have Nigeria that produces oil.
Yeah.
But so do you also have Egypt. You have... Mozambique, you have South Africa, you have Angola, you have DRC, you have Libya, you have Algeria, you have Morocco, you have Tunisia. I'm just mentioning all the oil-producing countries. Yeah. All of them can subsidize the fuel, the aircraft fuel needed.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, when Namibia is literally at the cusp of all of this, Helmut, that discussion of the power to X, the green hydrogen power to X conversation that we looked at, I hope you listened throughout those audios when it went into the biofuel and then the economics behind after the biofuel and the Oshikoto renewable power station that they're building on the other side of Tsumeb, is that what those German economists and engineers or economics engineers or engineering economists outlined in that presentation held at UNAM was Namibia has the potential to produce synthetic aviation fuels, because the power to X concept is literally the replacement of the petrochemicals concept.
That's going to take a while too.
No, Helmut. What? No.
No, in terms of
The petrochemicals. That's after 10 years from now. But if the green hydrogen production in Namibia starts, then you can start the power to X concept.
In the aviation industry?
Helmut, it's not just aviation fuel that you're going to make.
Uh-huh.
You're going to make everything
that
petrochemicals industry makes. You can make it's literally trade substitution just like that. Oops. With a clean product. With no pollution afterwards. No pollution before, no pollution afterwards. Zero balance. All you're doing is you're creating charcoal for the power station, and what those economists outlined is the capturing mechanism that you've got to employ. Are you going to use a sort of like a carbon capture mechanism? Or are you going to do this? It was three mechanisms that I highlighted. Straightforward. Namibia can do everything. Thus bringing down the price of the fuel. If you bring down the price of the fuel, the rest of the economics will become digestible.
Thank you for bringing up that whole price thing. This whole thing will always keep bringing me back to... Okay, yes, sir. Let's connect the whole of Africa.
It is plausible. Even today.
We can. Say for a couple of places where you will have to get rid of a lot of landmines before you layer down, you know, that piece of infrastructure. But here's the thing.
Mm.
In all these discussions, there is a main topic which is very central to all this connectivity, whether it's business or just business or pleasure in terms of cross-border travels on the African continent, we are missing out.
Mm.
Economic inequality.
What do you mean with the inequality discussion?
Economic inequality?
Yeah.
Right now, if you look at, we have food, we keep talking about food insecurity. And one thing that we have established is that, which is because it's that apparent, is that, we don't have food insecurity because because of lack of food. We have food insecurity because of lack of means of access to the food.
Yeah.
Now,
money.
The money. We don't have money to buy bread, but somehow we think once the infrastructure is set up, we'll all of a sudden have enough money to afford a plane ticket.
That is the biggest concern. Because the biggest concern is, besides what you're basically explaining is the disposable income thing, is how does everyone have jobs? You first need to ensure that everyone in an economy or in an African economy has jobs. I'm way ahead. I'm on a Christmas list now. So I'm sorry. Firstly, you need to ensure that nobody is shooting anyone. No one is bombing anyone. No one is bombing anyone. There are no coups. There are no tainted elections processes.
And thank you for going that direction. Considering there's one country which is very central to Africa's growth in terms of natural resources and significant population and market size, that's DRC. That's considering hiring a bunch of trigger happy guys to be, you know.
No. First training them. Then hiring them. They probably never went to school.
So the shooting parties, so they don't shoot each other parties out through the window.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
So it would probably be, let's go all gung-ho, Wild West situation. So yeah, that's the situation.
Yeah, maybe I'm thinking of it in a very shallow way, because for me it's we want to move people from one country to another so they can trade with each other or improve each other's tourism. Now the reason why I would actually put my money on a rail in this whole discussion is rail transport for me is combines travel and tourism.
Thank you. And freight. And freighting.
Yeah, you can move a lot of of cargo via rail than you can via air.
And via road.
Yeah, and via road.
Yeah.
So that means now, just imagine what an awesome panoramic view you'd have hopping on a plane here in Namibia, en route to Tanzania.
Well, let's first stop the bus there, Hamoud. Let me park that bus in a decent parking space.
Everyone has a job. I can't believe you went there.
With just my code C driver's license.
Yeah.
No, code C is higher. But anyway, that driver's license code that I have. And the one just for vehicles. And we look at, first and foremost, why no one on the African continent has taken the upgrading and improvisation of legacy infrastructure.
Yeah.
So legacy infrastructure, Hamoud, is something like Namibia's railway system.
Yeah.
Namibia's railway, guess who installed Namibia's railway system?
The Germans.
Yebo. So we are sitting with the railway system for 130 years.
Yeah.
For 130 years in between, when the South Africans were also here, no one decided to upgrade the system.
They just say like, well, it's German, so it's going to last.
Yeah.
And boy, did it last.
And our current scope of how our railway system is currently being operated is literally like Bekele Thomas said, don't build a road from a mine to the port.
And you want to develop.
And you're calling it development. Because then the whole country sees, Ahman, you're lying.
Yeah.
We can see it's for the mining company. We can see it's for the transport companies.
Yeah.
Who are you talking? What development? I'm not eating that thing. I can't eat it.
That's a development for them, not us.
Yeah. But if you go to India, and I know I'm using India.
And those guys need more trains. I've seen the capacity.
They do. But they've had those trains and that railway system, Helmut, for 200 years. The British went and installed it for them. And guess what? The trains were used by the British to respond quicker, meaning to deploy the army quicker.
Uh-huh.
They used the train system. What are we sitting with here? To carry rocks from one point to another point? Hence the reason why the UN came and told us, okay, now try and differentiate or try and expand from what you have now. Expand upwards. Use that thing and install and invest and incentivize upwards. If it's copper, expand upwards for copper. If it's gold, expand upwards for gold. How much you can't buy the gold directly as a Namibian? And even if you had access to a mine, it's a similar thing to diamonds. You can't go and hit a hole in a mountain on your farm, because the Ministry of Mines and Energy will come and tell you, even though you own the deed,
mm-hmm.
Helmut, why didn't you list this with us? Or why didn't you apply for an exploration license?
Yeah.
Helmut, if you have a deed, a title deed mm-hmm. to a piece of land, nah, you can go buy a shovel and you can start making all the holes in the ground as much as you want. Ministry of Agriculture won't do anything to you. They won't. They can't. That title deed is stronger than the constitution of this country. I'll say it again. A title deed is stronger than the constitution of this country.
Dude, I've seen that document put put someone who was married for 30 years And then found out, I think I see 25 to 30 years, then found out that there were some technical issues with the, you know, with their marriage paper. So technically their marriage was null and void. So then the broad started claiming that because of these whole technicalities, therefore we are not married. I was just, you know, well, since we are not legally married, then because the madam was staying in the house that they have acquired together. Well, the man was claiming that, no, she, you know, she's illegally occupying my house, and filed for an eviction notice. Now, the whole thing basically went to court, and we, you know, ended up in a, you know, divorce, like marriage tit for tat.
Exactly.
Yeah. The man claimed that they didn't, you know, because of the whole technical issue, their marriage paperwork, they were not married. Therefore, she was occupying the house illegally. But then the title deed had both their names on. The ruling was made on the title deed. Like, Oga, yeah, we know all the technicality, but here's the thing. You both have your names here. And, well, this one is saying...
And do you know what's the saddest thing there? The court immediately goes in the favor of that document.
Yeah, the court was like, yeah, right.
Because a title deed is as strong as a will and a testament. It's as strong as that thing. Now, the thing is, if a will and a testament includes a title deed, the will and a testament is even more powerful than that.
Yeah, my supervisor like to call will a testament. So what's that? Giving a witness statement from beyond the grave.
Yeah.
So it's kind of difficult to argue with that guy.
No, it's not a witness statement. No.
It's just... command.
It's a command.
Yeah.
It's not even an instruction. It's a command.
It's a command. Yeah. This is what I want, and it's gonna happen. Now, let's come back to reality first in terms of Africa's connectivity in infrastructure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go back to Africa and, you know, Africa's infrastructure and energy discussion that we had with, you know, where Bekele Thomas basically dominated the, you know, well, the discussion. She's back again in this discussion.
She'll always come back in this one.
Yeah. Now, this is part of her speech. Transport and energy now sits at the center of Africa's economic future. They will shape whether the continent industrializes, whether the Africa Continental Free Trade Area becomes commercially real, and whether Agenda 2063 is experienced through jobs, production, connectivity, power access, and low cost of doing business.
Exactly.
The foundation is transport and transport and energy. Now, for this, just to take, transport is central to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then she goes on to say that transport and energy connectivity is going to determine Africa's ability to produce, trade, and compete. So, hence, she kept emphasizing that if your goal is production, that will lead to industrialization. You really have to recalibrate how you are setting up your infrastructure, because from a mine to a port... That's not for your development, idiot.
But you are right, Helmut.
Look,
because
that's not for your development.
Because right here
in
our conversation is the Lobito Corridor.
Exactly.
Because we need to know if the Lobito Corridor is going to have just one old eensy weensy little two-track railway network. Or if it's actually going to be multiple railway tracks.
Okay.
That are going to be spanned. Because then you can run a freight train on the one,
mm-hmm.
a commuter train on the one, an intercity situation, transport situation, and an additional lane just for backup. But if you're going to just have one little two track,
is most likely going to be the case, because the people that are throwing their money behind the project, their main goal is not to transport your people from point A to point B, is to transport resources from Zambia through DRC straight to the port, you know, to the port of Lobito in Angola, so it gets on a ship.
Exactly.
Yep.
So we are basically confirming what it basically is. It's for the extractive sector. Nothing else.
Yep.
Nothing more. They got 450 million of seed investment already from the US and the EU together. Remember, it was something that the three nations asked SADC, can they develop this? And then they applied.
SADC was like,
nah, it's fine.
Fine, go ahead.
It's cool, guys. And then they went and applied and presented it to the EU and the US together.
Yeah, they were like,
And the EU and the US together said, nah, it's cool. Because the EU has this benevolence of, we need to help all the developing zones of the world and upgrade the infrastructure. Yeah, but you're just building a basic two-track.
Yeah. Now, let's get to the money part.
Yeah.
According to to Bekele Thomas' speech, the continent still requires between 130 to 170 billion USD in infrastructure development a year.
Yeah.
And now this 130 and 170 billion dollars, just multiply that by what? 18 to convert it to Namibian dollars?
Yeah.
Yeah. 130 to 170 billion US dollars a year. That's how much is needed a year. And the thing is, the annual shortfall of that amount is 68 to 108 billion.
So it's an underfunding.
Yeah. As always, I mean, in Africa, that
underfunding is it's only in Africa that you hear of underfunding.
Yeah. Now, in 2012, I believe. Yeah, from 2012, I'm not sure exactly when the project started. The program for Africa development, the program for infrastructure development in Africa, but it is set to run until 2025 to get this more like to reach this like industrial developed country level in terms of infrastructure development. Fast forward to 2025, only 18% of the projects were completed.
Does that sound like that National Planning Commission? No? That committee, the Standing Committee on Capital Projects visit?
Yeah, pretty much. Only this is continental. 18%?
It's less than a third, Helmut. It's less than 30%, which is a third.
Again, you know why this doesn't shock me after World... thanks to the University of Eagle FM since 2022.
Okay, why doesn't it shock you? Okay, let me listen.
The reason why it doesn't shock, because every time that we talk about African Union and implementation of their project,
yeah,
it always comes down to funding.
Yeah. It always comes down to
money. It's always going to come down to funding. If the organization itself, in terms of their day-to-day activity, including their headquarters,
yeah,
did not, was not, it's not something that it's not their brainchild, both financially and set up and everything. It wasn't their brainchild. It wasn't their brainchild. Sorry, I'm going. But the thing is, when you...
You should have just slid over it, Helmut.
No, I like that region for some reason. Now, the thing is, you are looking at, when you look at it from the money perspective, then you understand how difficult it's going to be for us to accomplish a lot of the goals that we would like to accomplish as a continent. Because we are very good at, meeting every year, and then we talk about what we would like to achieve in 2030 or 2063. But we don't want to figure out how can we raise the money to fund it ourselves.
Yeah.
First, before we go out there and start saying, here may dollar, may bro. Now,
what are we doing today?
Look, that's
nobody flows. Don't worry.
Thanks, man. Look, that's us on an international scale.
And then we still have, I almost said the other word, we still have the goal.
Mm-hmm.
To go and tell Italy, yeah, stop just talking.
It's not just
let your money do the work. I was like, openly acknowledging to be a beggar?
Yeah, pretty
on
much.
On your own particular development needs? Helmut,
didn't you say, is it some army general from Nigeria or some army guy who said the same thing? Is it in Italy again?
When we did the Africa military whatever that was hosted by the American army in Austria, and I was like, yay. Yay. I mean,
so we went begging again.
Do we Africans just love S&T and travel just to get away from the office? What is going on? You know, our colleague Gabriel wrote a lovely opinion piece. Was it opinion piece or article back in last week about what do the meetings translate to? All these meetings and all these conferences,
exactly,
and all this showcasing of who showed up where. What does it actually contribute?
In terms of, like, let's see the tangible evidence. You know,
what did we achieve after having a lovely buffet?
Yeah.
And saying lovely words and speeches. What did we achieve?
All you can eat.
Yeah. And that is a point. I mean, now when that dust settles on conversation and people actually gathered their strength after, you know, going a little bit breathless and losing a little bit of consciousness for talking so much. Now we have to see, what work are you going to do? What's your work on the ground? Do you know what is one of the fundamental things that I discovered in the standing committee? I know it's a completely different topic to involve in this discussion, but this topic has an element that is central to this conversation of solving your own issues, Helmut.
Yeah.
Namfisa, in the standing committee engagement of 2 weeks back, was asked by one of the committee members of the standing committee of industry, economy, planning and public affairs. They were just asked a basic question. Are you in every town of Namibia to assist with enforcement and with consumer education activities about the rights that consumers have when dealing with microlenders?
No.
Guess the answer. Just guess the answer. It's a no.
Yeah.
They had to acknowledge it. No. Now, you have an SOE, Helmut, that claims to be national. But tries to do, trust me, bro, from Windhoek. Only from Windhoek. And then they've got, how can I put it, an annual regional consultation process. So every year, once a year, The consumers have to look forward to a town visit, wherever, for Namfisa them to come and share information with consumers regarding microlending, what rights they've got, what consumer protections they have, XYZ, XYZ.
Yeah.
And in between, Namfisa wants to introduce the consumer credit bill?
Yeah.
Yeah, they wanted to introduce the consumer credit bill. But if you don't have an office in every major town, that, you know, the regional capital of the region, if you don't have an office in the regional capitals even of every region of this country, how then are you going to achieve a stakeholder engagement or stakeholder inputs into the consumer credit bill? Do you know that consumer credit bill showed up there, right there, when I was sitting there recording? And I was like, "Var, where is this thing coming from?"
Well, we're just telling you that we...
We just pulled the rabbit out of the hat. Look, guys, I can do magic tricks. Look at me, I'm a magician. But where was it? Who was championing it? What are we doing here? Are we playing charades with each other? Do we think the economy is a joke? The economy wants to make money and wants to continue with things. But who's saying what? So... the reason why I highlighted that, Helmut, is the microlenders are technically the ones that are obviously must now supposedly inconveniencing the Namibian consumer. They are acting, Helmut, not because there's a loophole, which there is, not because it's a loophole. It's because, Helmut, they realize they need to be entrepreneurial,
mm-hmm,
to make money wherever they find themselves. Because when that question was asked to Namfisa, are you guys in every part of the country? The answer being no, was the motivation for the question was given. It was, well, because much of the supposed illegal micro-lending or cash loans activities, mm-hmm, are happening outside of Windhoek. So technically that means you and I, we are over-regulated in Windhoek.
Because it's the center of all the, you know, Namibia's commercial activities.
Which is also an imbalance in trade, because... like I've described many times here on Eagle FM, is why is All Trade first coming to Windhoek? Walvis Bay needs to pick up its own act. You can't be a port facility, but on your way to the port facility, Helmut, you literally look, it literally looks like Fallujah. Or it literally looks like Kabul when the war broke out back then in 2000. I mean, you can't be sitting with a war zone in your main street.
You're not planning on going to Walvis anytime soon, are you?
That's one town I will never miss in my life. I'm sorry, guys, if you're from Walvis. I won't miss your town. Literally.
Guys, that's right.
I won't miss your town. That town, Helmut, could have been on another level. But there is something wrong with the investment culture in buildings, in roads, in the overall investment into infrastructure in that town. It's just not making sense. And then I go visit my younger brother over the weekend. I ask my younger brother, who laid the interlocks, this interlock road? Who laid it here? Here in Avis. My brother lives here in Avis. Who laid this interlock road? He said, no, Dwight, the property developer built this. Laid these interlocks. Not the city of Windhoek building it. Do you know where city of Windhoek's actual road ended? It's like a 5-meter tar road. And then it's interlocks from there.
So it's for private property.
No, Helmut. They decided to,
you know what,
to build the road as they were building the complexes around.
So it's part of their blueprint.
They decided to interlock the road. Why in everything that's blue, green and beautiful on this planet are we struggling with tar roads in this world? Are we struggling with tar? Helmut.
But don't worry, we will afford the aviation industry. Look, that's what I'm saying.
Say it. Let's hear it.
Look, that's what I'm saying. Let's start with something that is make sense, judging by our budget. Now, here, look. The thing is, we can afford. You know, we can afford the aviation industry as a continent.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have the resources. All we just have to do is manage it in a way.
Move away from the resources comment. Move away from resources.
No,
Hamoud, just move away from it.
You know where I'm headed.
No. Okay, I don't know, I have an idea.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay. But you have to move away from the word resources.
Now, let's go to, I'm taking you back to the Africa, not the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, the Lobito Corridor Group.
Yeah.
The Lobito Corridor Group starts from Zambia, right? Now, Zambia is one of the biggest producers of copper.
Yep.
Yeah. And Zimbabwe is one of the biggest producers of lithium on the continent.
Yep.
Now, the thing is,
while being sanctioned.
While being sanctioned.
So I'm trying to understand, how are you producing and who are you selling to, Zimbabwe?
Look, you know what's my favorite part? Zimbabwe just got out of, just said no to a U.S. aid health deal, citing
an imbalance in
digital security.
Yeah. In data protection.
Digital security problem. Like, you know, this is, you know, the terms in this contract is, it's more of an invasion to my privacy than you helping me with whatever aid package that you are trying to bring in. One thing where you are seeing that there's a, this is a lot, you know, this is very fishy, is, if you really care about, the health or the well-being of the people on the African continent, why did you start defunding pretty much every international organization that was doing that, USAID? Now, of course, when it comes to the, defunding of PEPFAR and USAID, you can find a lot of explanation as to why the Trump administration did that in the America First Global Health Strategy. But, the thing is, Zambia, had a due date of April 30th to sign to sign their agreement for them to have access, I think, up to $2 billion US dollars over a period of 5 years, and that's in health aid. The thing is, the Zambian government it turns out they just stopped picking up their calls.
Yeah.
So Washington was calling and calling, like someone probably somewhere in Namibia in a long distance relationship, and there was no picking up. So when that due date lapsed, the outgoing, is it Michael Gonzalez, the outgoing U.S. ambassador to Zambia, sort of like in a very diplomatic way criticized the Zambian government for letting the deal lapse and instead of of signing ASAP. Now the Zambian foreign minister, I think it was the Zambian foreign minister and the Zambian president spokesperson came out and said, no, the reason why they didn't do that is because this is supposed to be a health aid, but it's coming with a lot of natural resources attachment to it. And that's one thing they don't understand. Like, just split.
So it was basically a cash arrangement to gain access.
Yeah. That's how it's being interpreted. Even though they say he said, she said. But even though the Zambian government, for the first time, I think on Monday, came out with an official statement saying, basically explaining why they didn't sign the agreement. Washington is still saying, well, we can't.
Was it this past Monday?
This past Monday.
Okay.
We can't talk about, ongoing discussions in terms of, whatever deal they have, they have with the Zambian government. But, here's the thing. What you're seeing there is that, Washington is representing its private sector. One thing they need, what's one of the things that's booming in the tech industry? AI. What does AI need? A lot of processing infrastructure. That's where data center comes in. Data center needs a lot of copper, which Zambia and DRC have in abundance.
Have you heard that the quiet construction jobs that have just stopped?
Quiet?
So last year there was this proliferation of data centers across the US and Europe.
Yeah.
Suddenly, it has just stopped.
Air bubble?
Yeah.
No surprises there. Now, the thing is, you're looking at how
because the data centers were built for the AI.
Yeah.
Not for us or the banking to have more storage space. No, it was literally for AI. No, it's busy crashing, Amut. Don't worry.
Like, look.
And it's the reason why they went after Greenland. Even though indigenous Greenlanders said, we don't want to be with the United States. We prefer to be with Denmark. They get free healthcare, get everything. And Donald Trump is making promises to the Greenlanders that he can't even deliver to the Americans.
Oh, boy. That would have worked in the absence of... if only mainstream media was at play.
Mm.
But thanks to people travel now, and there's the internet, there's social media. Talk about shooting yourself in the foot. I mean, they invented the whole internet thing in the first place. But now, information is very easy to access.
Mm.
Some reason, people still tell you a lot of I don't knows into something that is that's publicly available.
Yeah. Now, I also don't know how people can say, I don't know if I can just Google search the thing.
Someone is sending me a message on WhatsApp. What does this mean? Like, okay, the fact that you're sending me a message on WhatsApp means you're online. Could you have just Googled it?
Exactly that question.
Like, okay. Now, money is the problem. And if you ask me, money is not something that we don't have as a continent. We do. But we are very good at mismanaging it.
Yep.
Yeah. And when I say mismanaging, that's being diplomatically correct. There's a lot of, career politics going on.
Mm.
We've turned politics into a career where people get into public office not to serve the public, but as an opportunity to get rich. It's a get-rich-quick scheme. And as long as we just keep looking at politics like that, which is not something that's unique to Africa, by the way, it's the world over.
Mm.
It's just that, developed countries can afford that. We can't. We just don't have the luxury. We don't have money, we don't have money to burn like a lot of developed countries do. So the little that we have, we're channeling it into, iPhones with 2 SIM cards. So, and then we attend we attend all these events making Mr. Shobon calls expensive promises.
But we will always make the expense of promises, Helmut, because how do we go and tell Europe, put your money to work so that you can pay us?
Yeah, so...
I mean where do we get off? Where do we get off being demanding in a conversation?
So sell it.
Basically. And even to top off what you were explaining, when I asked you, I almost debated with you. Lose the word resources in this conversation.
Yeah.
In this equation. Lose the word resources. Because resources, you are immediately telling any person out there, like subconsciously, mining activity. Mining activity. Mining. Helmut, not every Namibian wants to work in the mines. We don't want to work in the mines.
Now, when you look at our reliance, though, not just as a country, but also as a continent.
Yeah, if you are used to living in an urban center, ne, do you want to go live in the bush? Okay, you basically did bush work before. But I'm not talking about the farming. I'm talking about the teaching. You did bush work before.
But yeah, I did both before.
But think about it. Just think about
it. Shall I still do both, you know, the farming part?
But just think about it. Is it something that you would think of? It's something I love doing?
No, absolutely not.
Because, nobody loves snakes. Last time I checked, there's no human that loves snakes, except those with the weird fetish for having snakes as pets. But no one loves snakes. No one loves scorpions and massive spiders and the potential odd leopard hanging in a tree, probably looking at you as the next lunch meal. No, nobody likes that.
I don't understand the concept of a snake as a pet.
Me neither, Helmut. Me neither. And have you realized that the term cold-blooded technically applies to us? The mammals.
No, we're warm-blooded.
Because we can adjust our body temperature adjusts to the environment's temperature.
You're right. Reptiles, on the other hand, they have to change environment for them to maintain their internal body temperature.
Better body temperature. But we adjust to the external environment, us mammals.
So we have a building mechanism. That's awesome.
And the phrase cold-blooded is technically a misnomer.
Wait, aren't we the warm-blooded one and the reptiles are cold-blooded?
Technically, yes. But the phrase, you know, in colloquial in English is always applied to a predator.
Which is called in as zero sympathy.
It's zero sympathy, zero emotion, cold-blooded. That's the phrase most. So when it comes actually to the scientific designation, is that it's that they say mammals are the ones that have to adjust, and reptiles and amphibians are the ones that have to do the other particular adjustment.
Have to manually adjust, man. Yeah. That must be difficult.
So
I have to find a cool environment every time I'm about to boil, and I have to find a warm environment every time I'm about to freeze. Eish. Stop being a snake.
That one, Helmut, that one. So when we obviously look at this particular conversation point, why I want us to move away from the term resources or putting the word resources in the same sentence as anybody else, for that matter, is primarily because it signals to one sector. Helmut, earlier today, I walked through one of the malls. Because I had to do this, I needed to go to this one shop because it only had the particular product I needed. Do you know how versatile consumer activity is? Do you know how vibrant consumer activity is? Consumer activity, specifically retail, the retail sector of a country, allows people to get access to so much more products. In so much more volume, but it concentrates them in like a few spots. That's why I gave the explanation why Independence Avenue is dying and you have a proliferation of the American concept, the shopping mall. It's an American concept that the South Africans brought to Africa and thus we have today. But before we continue, guys, we quickly take a short break and we come back right after this.
Okay, right then.
Hold on.
on, just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was...
Oh, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just get more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, aye. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ileko derewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. 17 minutes into the hour of 17 minutes into the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. As always, we're here until the hour of 6. And today's discussion is based on Africa, on Aviation Week Africa that took place last month here in Windhoek, where the main discussion was basically how to connect Africa's skies in terms of transport, you know, cross-continent travel, transcontinental travel. Cross-continental travel of the African continent. And there are a lot of things to iron out, including, obviously, beginning from the infrastructure discussion, because that's just for Namibia. I think that's where we have it easy now, because when we are having this discussion as a country like Namibia and South Africa through Botswana, Zambia, and Zimbabwe in that bucket, we can just start having this discussion from the infrastructure point of view. But if we are talking about bringing to life the Africa Continental Free Trade Area in its full swing, we're talking about connecting all the African countries. Now, this is where I think we are approaching this subject with a one-size-fits-all type of scenario, which I think it's not fair, because if you and I, Dwight here, or basically anyone in Namibia, when we're talking about connecting Namibia to other African countries, it's very easy for us to have.
Yeah.
But for countries like, Sudan and Libya, on the other hand, they have to start from a political stability component.
Yep.
Which is like 10 steps behind us.
Yep. I mean, it's such a particular... It's such a particular conversation, Helmut, that has to look at the context of, okay, did you sort out your internal affairs in your country? Mozambique, yeah. Throw Mozambique in there. Madagascar in there. Throw DRC and Rwanda into that mix. Throw the three misfits from West Africa in there. Because one of the misfits was basically almost a failing government, Mali, because the Minister of Defense, remember, was
killed in
an ambush, in a violent ambush, I think not last week, the week before. So present the reality to any sort of like sane, logical economic planner in the world. That economic planner will tell you, but I can't go and open up a business, Dwight, in a war zone or close to a war zone. I can't have a business in Kenya and Sudan is going completely bonkers. I can't have a business in Mali because it's the Tuareg and the Islamists that are attacking the so-called national government, which is technically the army of Mali. Helmut, just to explain to you a very weird thing, which is a documentary I also watched about Mali, was the Islamic terrorist problem in Mali specifically, and the whole discussion as to why the French were present in Mali. Now, and this is where I've started looking at the discussion of propaganda, to be specific, you know, and this coming through from various kinds of media. Mm-hmm. So, in many cases, many Africans, and I'll call them the Pan-Africanists, were complaining about the French military presence in Mali, and that they are only there to protect the French business interests. But the Malian army could not protect the French business interests. Look, Hamoud, it's similar to like in Namibia. Ne? The Namibian police, the Namibian Defense Force has to protect both Namibian and South African, of, let's say, foreign business interests in the Namibian economy.
Yeah.
I'll say it again. The Namibian police and the Namibian Defense Force have to protect both local and foreign business interests in the Namibian economy. They have to. Firstly, a local investor, meaning a local Namibian investor, has seen that there's a level of trust to opening up and investing in a physical business infrastructure in Namibia. Let's, for example, take Eagle FM. You know, our boss, John, he saw that Namibia is safe enough to open up a private broadcasting entity known as Eagle Media House in the Namibian economy, because he has an assurance that the Namibian police, the Namibian Defense Force, will come to his aid as an investor, as an employer, as a business person, to literally have, to literally protect his business interests.
Yeah.
Which is straightforward. That's why they exist, guys. It's not just about the law and order. It's not just about the border safety. It's not just about national and sovereign integrity. It's all the other sort of like reasons that you can also list below that. The second scenario has been, if you also look further past it, is that this then tells any other investor to come to the same zone and also open up businesses, to come and invest in the same spot, not in the same sector though, not in the same industry though, but in the same vicinity, in the same geographic location. Now, what I don't understand, Helmut, and this is straightforward, what I don't understand is when I have to look at some of these AU platforms and discussions and you know, was it Macky Sall or was it Moussa Faki with the Italy-Africa conference, Italy-Africa discussion?
And that was Moussa Faki.
Was it Moussa Faki?
Yeah.
Was Moussa Faki going and telling the Italians, make your money speak. Stop talking.
Yeah.
It's about your money doing the work.
Stop yapping. Where's the money?
But then you go look at the weird things that they commit. Now, the weird thing is, I don't know how African media consumers, and I'm talking about now us, everyday African media consumers.
Yeah.
Why do we love the clown show of what politics puts up instead of looking at, okay, what developments are happening in my country? And where can I go and open up a business?
One thing I have observed about most of us is we don't pay attention to what the person is saying.
No, we don't.
We don't. We either side with them because we go to the same church, or I know the person personally, or we support the same football match, or we're from the same tribe.
Or we reignite a colonial discussion.
Yeah, but...
You're like, what are you doing?
It's like... Which is why, I mean, it's very easy to lie. which is why I laughed a lot. That was in March, right, when the whole Madagascar thing was going on. The military guy that took over, you know, that took over is Michael Michael Randranirina. Very complicated name.
The captain.
Yeah. One thing that he did was he tried to implement lie detector in the recruitment of ministers. You know what? For you to be in the ministerial position, you must pass a lie detector. I don't know where he factored election in, or he was just planning on replacing election with lie detector, which was like, you know, we're talking about politics, right? Where lying is the order of the day. That lie detector is going to be on red 24/7.
Yeah, that is true. Eh?
Look, man. Lie detector? You want to bring a lie detector in politics? But the thing is, because we have turned politics into a career, It's very important to pay attention to what the person is saying. You don't have to agree with someone's point of view outside the topic they are there to discuss.
Yeah.
Yeah. You may not be, you may not go to the same church or support the same football team or same tribe or same religion, same whatever. If he's there to talk about infrastructure development, just, ask him questions based on the topic that he came. This person came to talk about infrastructure development, whether it's housing, roads, internet connectivity, electrical, you know, universal electricity, connectivity around the country. And you are just dismissing every point he makes, not because of the topic, at hand, because you had a fight somewhere in high school.
Yeah.
Like, that's the part that we miss by a whopping margin. And because of that, and those that like that person, they don't want you questioning everything that he's saying. Look, if I'm asking a question, I'm not doubting his ability to execute. I have a question that needs an answer. It's very simple. But the thing is, a lot of us, a lot of politicians are into politics for all the wrong reasons, and a lot of supporters of this of the politicians are supporting them for all the wrong reasons.
Mm. No, you're right.
Yeah. Now, if someone stole money, irrespective of their gender or their tribe or their religion, how do I put this the pigeon English way? Tif na tif.
What? Did you say?
I have no idea.
What? What did you say? Okay, let's breathe. Let's breathe.
Look, a thief is just a thief.
Thief.
Yeah, okay. A thief is just a thief. If we I know that this is a very excellent deflection in terms of debates.
Yeah.
Deflection, it's a very deflection strategy, where if I get in a debate, for example, I'm right, I'm driving a car in the road, and then I bump into a car in front of me, and it's completely my fault, and then that car is being driven by a white guy. When he comes out of that that car, I start to pointing to colonialism. You know what, you bombed my car. It's your fault. Now, when you try to connect now colonialism with you bombing
with
my car
accident,
like where does this two meet? Let's just talk about now.
Yeah.
Now, the colonialism happened. Yes, let's put a pause on that. If we are going to debate that, we'll debate it as a topic on its own.
Yeah.
Right now, let's talk about what happened now. Yeah. You bumped my car, so it's your fault. But every time that, every time that we are put into a corner, we change. And I have seen that, with black people. I have seen that with, with hardcore feminists. I've seen that with a bunch of people coming out of the LGBTQ community. That's Israel's get out of jail free card. Every time they want to stop the debate, they accuse you of being an anti-Semite.
That is true.
Even if it has nothing to do with anti-Semitism.
Mm.
And but the next thing you know, you are talking about Nazi Germany. The whole thing is a deviation from the topic at hand.
No, it's a distraction.
It's a distraction.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a sign of someone that doesn't have any factual point to make in relation to the point at hand.
This Mother's Day, ShopRite is here to help you celebrate every mom in your life. With our low prices on thoughtful gifts and delicious treats, it's never been easier to make her feel truly special. Spoil mom with deals like 400 grams Happiness Fine Pralines chocolate assortment for only $89.99 and 400 mils Nivea Body Lotion or Cream, all variants for just $54.99 each. Or simply give the gift of choice with a ShopRite gift card, valid until 10 May 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. 30 minutes into the hour of 29 minutes to the hour of 6. If you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. So every time that any public official, irrespective of whatever debate, or if you hate them for any personal reason, if they come with a nationwide type of discussion, take for example consultations, just talk about the topic at hand. And why is this a big problem? We talked about this when, financial representatives from the Minister of Finance, I believe, across SADC met in, Joburg? We had a discussion on that where some representatives, I think from Uganda or Tanzania, pointed out that the reason why they find it very difficult for them to do their jobs is because in their chain of command, this is public office, there are people from different political parties, but in their chain of command, there are people that are playing politics while in public office. I'm not disagreeing with your idea because it's a bad, it's a bad project that you are proposing, Dwight. Mm. I'm just disagreeing with your idea because you are from a different political party.
What the? Exactly.
And that's us.
That is us.
Mm-hmm.
That is us, Africa.
And I know, I think it was a member that liked to use the term, is it cheap politics?
And underwear and toothpicks.
Just to be specific, manufacturing of underwear. Manufacturing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before you have all kinds of ideas. But now, the thing is, for a lot of us, first of all, a large number of us are, quote-unquote, not interested in politics, which is my favorite part. You'll just keep being ignorant, because if comedy fails, politics, here I come. Now, the thing is, moving into the discussion of infrastructure, cross-continent infrastructure, the first thing to iron out is how are we going to create every country now has, first of all, every country has its own responsibility to create a political atmosphere that is stable.
Mm.
And right now, yeah. That's a very big question mark for a lot of African countries, the further north up you go. And now, putting all that aside, one question that we're also not talking about is, are we going to all implement capitalism?
Well, that's the thing, Hamu.
Yeah.
Can we all apply capitalism?
Yeah, can we all apply? Because let's say someone in northwest, east, central Africa decides, you know what? I want to adopt the Chinese economic model. Do we tell them adopt it, or do we just figure out where those ones that are using capitalism, or those ones that are using the Chinese model, how can they fuse together for the two, for us to trade or to have both diplomatic and economic relations with that country? We are not having that discussion.
Let me tell you a lovely experiment I ran yesterday on a journalist WhatsApp group with other journalists. I asked them the question. Question was based, Helmut, from... It was based from... What was it that I... Was it something I read or something that I wrote? However, the question was based upon... should Namibia become a socialist country with a socialist economy? Or should we pursue this mixed economy approach that Namibia currently still has?
Yeah.
Now, the reason I asked that question, Helmut, is because it seems like, and this is what I've assessed from the mentality of many people who are electorates, like voters.
Mm-hmm.
They assume the government must do everything for them. They assume the government must do everything for them. Helmut, I grew up in an era where we had to pay the $700 million to your school fees
per year.
I know you also grew up in that era.
Yep.
Before the government just decided unilaterally to disqualify. And this was at government schools. This was public schools.
Yeah.
But no one really interrogated specifically from the media. And this is where I also hold my industry accountable. No one really interrogated why was this collected in the first place. Now, I'll tell you why it was collected in the first place. Because I went to two schools where teachers actually motivated to the parent teacher board, that thing that was there, that the reason why the infrastructure needs to be maintained, why you have school ground cleaners,
mm-hmm.
and I call them janitors, and even a facility, the overall school ground, what's that phrase, man? That in Afrikaans it's opsichter, but it's a caretaker. Why you've got a care school ground caretaker. It was someone that stayed in one of the, like my old school, my alma mater, St. Taurus, had like a little, it had like separate lodgings, like it's like a small, it's almost like a miniature cottage,
mm-hmm.
for the caretaker, and if there was a teacher that could stay there,
mm-hmm.
you know, teachers that didn't have access to accommodation. It was at the boys' school. I had the boys' hostel and the girls' hostel.
Yeah.
And I saw it with the other alma mater I had, like in Riebos, when we moved here in 1999, at Dr. Lemmer, there was also a caretaker house for the caretaker. And then the girls' hostel matron and the guy on the boys' hostel side, they also had like a lodging, like that there was like a room situation for them.
Mm-hmm.
And this past Saturday, driving to Riebos, I looked at that old alma mater of mine and I saw how dilapidated that school is. From the fence to the sports facilities to the overall presentation of the school grounds itself,
mm-hmm.
was dilapidated, Helmut. A school that's close to 100 years old. There are so many schools here in Namibia that are close to 100 years old. They have history, they have culture, they are literally entrenched within Namibian communities in many towns across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And the first and foremost thing that was taken away was parents needed to have a buy-in into the school itself by contributing to the well-being and maintenance of the facility. So now that responsibility falls on the Ministry of Education, who relies on the Ministry of Works and Transport. Oh, and we've seen with the Oshikati door what happens when you rely on Ministry of Works and Transport. Ministry of Works and Transport is afraid of knowing a guy who can quickly fix it in 2 hours. Why? Because of the Procurement Act.
Yep.
So ultimately, we are now sitting with schools that have historic value and contribution to Namibian communities are dilapidated because we literally took away the ownership component from a parent. But then the situation is also that the dynamics, the economic dynamics within communities across Namibia also drastically changed. Now suddenly we sit with a lot more Namibians that can't afford money, which comes back to what we started with in today's discussion, the disposable income thing to be flying across borders.
Yeah.
Now, we sit with many Namibians who don't have access to money, to spare money, and if they have children, to contribute to the well-being and the maintenance of the school facility itself.
Yeah.
And here's the biggest thing even, and this is why I loved the opposition political parties back in 2021 up to 2025 last year. Back in 2021, LPM proved that even government is a bad payer to government. With the Keetmanswoop debacle that happened.
Yeah.
Because NamWater wanted to switch off the... NamWater gave an instruction to Keetmanshoop Town Council to disconnect the water of outstanding residential customers. And when... And I still remember that press conference. And when Swartboy went and had that conference with the whole town council's books, he said, top 10 debtors of the town council of the municipality of Keetmanshoop are all ministries. So I ask you, Hamoud, if we are trying really to play the game of good governance, responsibility in terms of making the money move, because at the heart of everything there, even with Satam, with the single African air travel mechanism or market, the aim there is the money must move. What are you making? What are you moving? Why are we flying? For tourism, for business, for trade. This is not just about literally what Bekele Thomas said. Stop building roads.
Just for the sake of it.
Just try to connect towns. Try to connect communities. The trade will happen if you do that, Helmut. The trade will happen if you do. It's what Richard Murphy explained, why people must get away from this notion of thinking that government debt is a bad thing. Government debt, Helmut, is a good thing, actually. I don't know who's also telling some of our politicians in office. Government debt is a good thing.
Yeah, that's until it reaches a level you can't service, then.
But then you have to ask yourself, why are you not paying it back? Why are you not paying? Helmut, when it comes to budgeting, there are things that are predictable, like salaries, like operational costs. And then you get to your development budget things. Now, what I realized from the thinking when I saw what Sherborn presented earlier this back in March after the budget tabling, when he did the budget analysis or review for IBPR, Sherborn highlighted a thing that I forgot about that South Africa had been doing for a long time. So why aren't we pushing the development budget onto the regions? Why is the development budget centralized in the ministries, in Windhoek?
That's what brings us to the discussion that I think we have been having for a while, the decentralization discussion.
Yeah. It will help with the procurement discussion. Because, Helmut, here's the thing.
Oof, the oversight.
Here's the thing.
You know, that means you also have to spread the oversight, like your ACC, for example.
But that means you must just hire more people.
Hire more people. And look, Sankwasa can't be everywhere.
It's not just about Sankwasa and a Sankwasanization ability. I'm also talking about, let's say, Ministry of Works and Transport. The actual guy is Ministry of Works and Transport, Ministry of Education, Ministry of Health, and Ministry of Gender and Children's Welfare. Those four ministries, Hamoud, directly deal with us, Namibians. We interact with them. And then Ministry of Finance comes along as a support function. Ministry of Environment is automatically there.
Yeah.
But Ministry of Environment will have its role to play. Ministry of Education is also automatically there, because Ministry of Education, where there's a town, there will be a school.
Yeah.
But we are lacking with the three core guys that I mentioned: health, children and women and children's welfare, the gender and child welfare, and works and transport. Works and transport, Helmut. Works and transport. I'll say it again.
Mm-hmm.
Works and transport has to step up its game, because when we did the Oshikari High Court door situation, at that stage, when we spoke about it, we were in month 6. That was last year, remember?
Yeah.
Month 6, June, I think. No, Oshikari was 2024. Month 6, June. You and I, we still didn't know if Oshikari Aikoto was fixed up until last year. We still don't know if it's been fixed into this year. Yeah. But before that, we've got an ad break.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was...
Oh, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give it more ice. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, I... When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yeah, 6% is not something that's impossible for Namibia to achieve because we've achieved it before, so we'll achieve it again in the in the past. COVID-19 was like, hold my beer.
COVID-19 was hold my plate of food, my beer,
the entire dinner table,
and even the baby.
Yes, so hold this. Let's see if you can grow by 6%. I believe we can pull that off, except there are a lot of global economic inconveniences to account for, which is going to be pretty tricky, seeing that the math being done out of the Trump administration is, close equals open. Now, but before we continue, let's take a live reading. Vilvicha University 2026 July applications are now open. A Faculty of Health Sciences, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8. Admission requirements have a recognized nursing qualification at NQF Level 7 or higher from any recognized higher learning institution. Must be a registered nurse/midwife with a Nursing Council of Namibia HPCNA. Minimum of two years working experience as a nurse/midwife in any health facility. Must write a short essay describing the motivation for pursuing postgraduate diploma in community health nursing. Qualification duration, 1 year. Mode of delivery, full-time. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Vilvicha University, where everyone is an achiever. So we have 12 minutes, maybe a minute or two. So.
So let's position the discussion like this, Albert, because just to blanketly say, we'd like to see a future where all African major airports are connected to each other. Well, how do you start? You start by talking to each other.
Yeah.
You then start by connecting with each other. Helmut, here's the thing. Go and ask yourself how many African embassies are in Namibia from all 54 countries.
I never asked myself that question.
Go and ask yourself, how many African embassies, how many countries does Namibia have bilateral relations with from the African continent?
I walk past the Egyptian embassy every day.
Yeah, okay. Egyptian, South African.
You have a Botswana High Commissioner.
Botswana, Angola, Ghana, Nigeria.
You have Tanzania.
There is no Tanzania.
Is it Tanzania or Kenya?
Kenya House. Yes, okay. Kenya. Zimbabwe, Zambia, Libya. Here somewhere in Ludwigsdorf.
Come again.
Here somewhere in Ludwigsdorf. I say here somewhere in Ludwigsdorf.
Nice.
Algeria. Who else? I'll get them. I'll get them.
Ghana?
No, I already mentioned Ghana. DRC. DRC is right next to Brazil and Spain. They're behind Vernil. Where are we? We're at 12. No? Yeah, 12. 12 countries.
So, Rwanda?
No Rwanda. No Uganda.
No Uganda.
Burundi. No Malawi.
Oh.
No Mozambique. No Madagascar. No Seychelles. No Mauritius. That's more than half of SADC already. Botswana. No, you mentioned Botswana.
Yeah, it's in Botswana.
Yeah. So when you look at this particular picture, 12 countries that Namibia has bilateral relations with.
In Africa?
In Africa.
Out of 54?
Out of 54 nations. We are asking a question, Helmut, in terms of what are we trying to signal? When I say trying to signal, the question is actually, what are we saying with this discussion from a Namibian perspective?
Yeah.
In terms of the spirit of what the AFCFTA tries to achieve. Now, remember, the AFCFTA is the overall project.
Yeah.
Under the project, you get SATM, the Single African Air Transport Mechanism or market. You get the high-speed rail discussion. You get the integrated infrastructure discussion. And you get the integrated economic goal. And then you get the other discussions that we spoke about. The African Union's own security force. The African Union Central Bank. What was the other one that we also highlighted, Hamoud? The potential for a African... but the one that was the one about sanctions, and even a disease. That there's one of our subjects topics under that list from the declarations, resolutions, and decisions.
Is
also the AU's own response to pandemics and disease outbreak. And the big concern from this has been. How are we advancing the discussion? What must we do to advance the thing? What must we do?
You know what Ghana? I think that was the Ghanaian or the Zambian government, but I think the Ghanaian government, in response to the whole very interesting, aid deal that they have been more like a lot of African countries have been jumping out of. Except for Rwanda, Eswatini, and Uganda, because those guys, signed, and maybe they were presented with a different agreement.
Yeah.
But one thing that Ghana is proposing is that let's share information in relation to all kinds of mechanisms of disease response.
Mm.
Yeah, so that I don't have to rely on you.
Mm.
And now that brings up a lot of, now that brings up a very interesting point to me, because you have to understand that in these whole negotiations, it's government-to-government negotiations.
Yep.
But if you're talking about sharing information in terms of that's coming out of research and development, especially with regards to pathology, it's being that aspect is dominated by the private industry of that country. So that means they have their own patents and intellectual property rights to all that information. You can go through that particular government for you to have access to that information, but it's not going to come free either.
Mm. It's not going to be free.
Yeah, no, it's not going to be free. So that keeps bringing us back to square one, research and development. Back to square one. So on transport, I think the biggest on transport, look, the biggest hurdle about Africa's trade is transport is us starting this discussion a few rungs up on the on this whole economic and industrialization advancement discussion on the African continent. But we have to start from the point that you just made. How good are we at diplomacy? How good are we at engaging each other on not just the diplomatic level, but also on economic level, because it all starts from a diplomacy and then spills over into, you know, governments must talk first so that through their governments, private sectors in different countries can have access to each other. And now with that in mind, are we doing that, or are we just meeting once a year at, you know, in Ethiopia?
For a workshop, basically.
Yeah, for a workshop.
With a lovely buffet.
Yep. No, suits and a lot of S&D.
And you're even paying for the accommodation you live in.
Then we set goals and we also, you know,
make decisions.
One thing we are good at is themes. To give
and
us credit.
Declarations.
Yeah, declaration. This year we have agenda this, agenda that. Dude, where's the money going to come from? We all have to contribute to other things. We don't have money. Yeah, that's because you stole most of it. And okay, some of these things just fly out.
Well, yeah, it happens.
Yeah. Now, I think, look, there's an excellent solution to all this transport. As a transport issue, especially in Namibia.
Mm.
We shouldn't be paying for transport. Again, research and development. Well, let's take the research and development further. Look, if I rise to power, you know, this whole transport discussion, the people I'm bringing together, I'm just gathering, you know, I'm making a think tank out of, out of Zambezians, Kavangos, and Dongas, since we are the ones that are accused of witchcraft all the time. Let's perfect the broom, guys. Let's solve this transport problem.
Perfect the broom. Yeah, perfect just, the broom.
Just perfect the broom technology.
And what? Add a propeller to it?
Just make that science, AI, witchcraft.
With indicators.
Now you're making it worse.
And even a wind deflector in the front, you know, so as to give maximum, you know, protection while gliding through
and
the sky.
And then add, you know, a directorate. One more director of the Ministry of Works and Transport.
Yeah.
Ministry of Works, Transport and Witchcraft. That'd be nice.
No. But at the heart of it, at the heart of it. And this is now where, so let's, for example, say on a micro level, Namibia's transport policy, Hamoud, outlines, and I know the transport policy predominantly spoke to public transport for that matter. But SATM is somehow connected or cross-border connected transport of passengers, basically, that aims to make people move. But the concern being, if you go to Namibia right now, Namibia is more connected with South Africa, and South Africa is more connected with the rest of the world than both these countries are connected to the rest of Africa.
Yep.
And we are sort of like banging our head against the wall about, yeah, why is it like this? Why is it like this? Why is it like this? Well, first and foremost, let's start from the basics. Firstly, we need to know if there's actually a functioning airport on the other side.
Yeah.
Helmut, it shouldn't be a problem there to fly from here to Sao Tome and Principe. It shouldn't be a problem to fly in a straight line from Windhoek. But let's first go and ask, is it going to be a $200 Namibian airplane ticket to fly from here to Sao Tome and Principe?
Capital, no.
Or would it be a $2,000 air ticket to fly from Sao Tome and from Windhoek to Sao Tome and Principe?
I think now what we just have to do, the whole question of why is it expensive to fly within Africa than outside of Africa.
Yeah.
I had that question ring at the back of my head for a very long time, which you became a balloon, which you just, busted that balloon when you asked a very simple question.
It had to be shot down, Helmut, let you know, it was floating there.
Yeah.
It was enjoying space it didn't pay for, and it just needed to be shot down.
Yeah. With a very simple question.
Yeah.
If you look at it from a commercial standpoint, if you are going to operate a plane, a passenger airline, from Windhoek to Accra, Ghana. How many people are flying?
Are willing to fly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Meaning between winter ticket sales.
Well, exactly. Because for it to stay operational, you need revenue.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The Ghanaians will get on the bandwagon first for that idea, Helmut, because they do have more people in their country than us. So there will be a whole bunch of Ghanaians buying that plane full to fly to Windhoek.
Yeah.
To come and see where a desert meets a sea, literally.
Yeah.
And then they'll go back. And then more Ghanaians will come back. But you won't see
Namibians
flying there. And then coming back to tell Namibians and more Namibians flying. No. It's from a Namibian perspective.
So a population is also a factor.
Well, okay. That aside, but you can immediately see in terms of appetite, Namibians are looking more towards the European, North American, and Asian markets for tourism.
What's the most preferred destination for a lot of Namibians? And what are they looking for? Because if there's nothing, if the large number of Namibians that are flying for reasons that I found, that are not found in Ghana, you can't force them to fly to Ghana.
Yeah. I will never come back from Ghana, I'll tell you now.
Yeah, me neither. Believe me.
And it's not about the country. Or the geography.
Nope. I know it's about geography, but it's a different geography.
Yeah. But okay. But before we continue, guys, and before we crack another joke that we're not supposed to be cracking, let's see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow.
Yeah.
This has been the home run, obviously, as we guide you through your drive time session. Tomorrow is another day, that obviously being Thursday. Stay tuned for the next program after the break.
All right, until tomorrow, same time, same place. Yours, stay tuned for the next program.